Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, peasants. I am Robert Evans, the Grand Dam of the podcasting scene, the Queen of England of casting pods, here to welcome you back to the internet's premier podcast, the only good podcast on the internet, Behind the Bastards.
I have a serious question. Did somebody bully you into watching Bridgerton on Netflix?
I don't know what any of those words mean, but I know that none of them are in the Bible.
Such a good comeback. I have nothing to say. Christopher Wong. Christopher Wong is here. This is great.
Hi, Christopher.
I'm here.
Hi, Chris.
How we doing?
I had a moral and spiritual crisis while writing the second part of this episode about whether I was going to do the thing I'm about to do, and so I'm going to just do it to you.
Okay. So, I love it when people do things to me.
We're just going to do it. Mm-hmm. Robert, have you ever fallen down the Gladio rabbit hole?
Oh, God. Now, let me tell you about this, Christopher, because I think about gladiuses all the time. And the big question in my mind is, right, do you go with an original Italian pattern, okay? Or do you go with, like, the Iberian pattern, which most people will agree is a superior stabbing weapon, but doesn't have quite as much of the historic cachet, because, right, like, that's not a first fucking Punic War weapon. So, I don't know. I think I'm probably just going to get several different gladiuses, and I think that that's probably going to be good for me. But everyone needs a gladius. It's the ultimate bisexual killing weapon because it's double edged and extremely sharp on all sides. And so I think that, you know, everyone, we have to stand a bisexual weapon of imperialist aggression, and that's why I support the gladius.
You know, okay. I think if you forced me to buy one gladius, I think I would go with the traditional one because again, like, you know,
sword, Sophie, that is in Chris's contract, right? That's all of our Cool Zone employees are legally required to own a gladius. Otherwise, yes. We can't draft you to take over. Because Chris, when we have to go take back and burn Carthage to the ground, what are you going to do without a gladius?
Well, I mean, here's the thing, right?
But you've got strong Principi energy too, so I feel like a pole arm would work well for you.
Well,
also.
I mean, this is the thing, right? Because your sword. If someone has gotten close enough to you to use a sword, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is your sort of like last resort personal defense weapon. But a pike, Now,
yeah,
that's why I said you have strong
Brinkapie energy.
And so you know, my thesis on this, right, is this allows you to get to get a more traditional original pattern of Italian gladius, right? Because the thing that you are depending on, right, for your life is the pike. And that means the gladius is the symbolic importance of the gladius, Chris, is able to shine through.
When we hired you, I thought to myself, this here is an individual who doesn't go by the cucked post-Marian reforms Republican military. And that's why you're on this team, because you understand that you need Triarii and Hestiati and Principi in order to, like, oh, sorry, it was Triarii were the ones with pole arms. Anyway, I fucked up this whole pre-Marian reforms Roman Republican military joke.
Can I just say,
by getting the kind of infantry, Robert, you were supposed to be wrong. Yes?
Stop talking, Chris, episode, go.
Okay. Operation Gladio. Sorry.
All right, Gladio. Yeah. How much do you know about this?
So yeah, I mean, a modest amount. Like, Gladio was the CIA being like, oh no, Italy and some other areas might vote for leftists, so we should set up a series of stay behind networks to repeatedly murder left wing media and political and organizing figures, and wage what is effectively like an extended insurgent campaign in countries that are quote unquote allies of ours on paper.
Yeah, that's most of it. There's a thing on Twitter where if you mention this about there's like a segment of Twitter.
This
that
is
goes
one of a number
insane.
Of things you don't want to have a conversation about on the Twitters.
Yeah. And you know, okay, we're going to get more into the part of this that involves the Rogue Masonic Lodge in a bit. Now, okay. Yeah. So, This is the sort of Gladio is the code name specifically of the Italian version of these stay behind networks. These things are originally established by Allied Command after World War II, and then they get armed and trained by the CIA. And you know, the theory behind this, right, is that, like, okay, if the USSR invades Europe, the Allies are like, well, we're gonna lose because the USSR has a better land army than we do. You know, but the theory is that they're gonna have this network of like guerrilla units in place to start an anti-communist resistance. I'm gonna read from the National Security Directive 10-2 that authorized this whole thing. So it authorizes a vast program of propaganda, economic warfare, preventative direct action, including sabotage, anti-sabotage, demolition, and evacuation measures, subversion against hostile states, including assistance to underground resistance movements, guerrillas, refugee liberation programs, and support of indigenous anti-communist elements, to be done so that any U.S. government responsibility for them is not evident to unauthorized persons, and that if uncovered, the U.S. government can plausibly deny any responsibility. So that the U.S. in the foundational
thing. I love how many
thing.
Different like things that are official government documents include the phrase "so the U.S. can possibly deny responsibility."
Yeah, it's great.
That's just good. That's just good for us.
You know, I mean, this is how you know the program is going to go incredibly well, and there's going to be zero problems with it ever.
Yep.
And yeah, so there's a bunch of these things across Europe. There's one in Belgium, they're in Denmark, they're in France, Germany, Greece, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Spain, Turkey, Austria, Finland, Sweden, and Switzerland, and also the UK. I don't know why the UK somehow didn't mention this.
I'm fine with that one. I'm just in generally okay with us fucking with the UK, but everywhere else
is like, So they kill like an enormous number of people. They're composed of, a lot of these people are literally just fascists who they were like, hey, you don't like communists,
sure,
we'll hand you a gun. there's a bunch of anti-communists. They have, you know, they have people in the state security services. So you've got like your soldiers, your cops, your spies, they're all involved in this. And, you know, you can already see the sort of similarities to Condor from last episode, right? Like this is a parallel network of soldiers, spies, and paramilitaries that the regular government A doesn't know about, and B is being run sort of is being like the internationally coordinated covertly. And these networks are heavily armed by weapons caches that are spread around all of these countries. And these things they've got guns in there, they've got explosives, they've got mortars.
Okay, I feel like you said weapons caches like in a negative way, and I just don't think that's very fair.
Well, you know, there's look, the only way to stop a bad guy with a weapons cache is a good guy with a weapons cache. But unfortunately, and this is the real problem here, is that the Soviet Union were pussies for the entire Cold War. It didn't give everyone weapons caches. So
they
we're
did
really
not.
Only
I mean, that,
dealing
that
with
is,
bad guys
that is,
weapons
that
caches.
Is what everybody says about the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
They did not give enough people weapons caches.
No,
that
didn't.
Is what I say about
it did.
The
it was
Soviet
coward,
Union.
Absolute coward stuff. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so these things are, yeah, look, you gotta give your guys something, man.
Yeah, like, the
you
U.S. can't just is handing out Scorpion machine pistols like they're fucking candy in Europe. Yeah, like come on.
You gotta, like, the USSR is, like, making you buy their AK-47s. Like, come on, we don't have any money. Where are we gonna buy an AK-47? It's terrible stuff. Now, okay, now, nominally, these things are supposed to fight, like, a communist invasion, but... Like, the actual thing that they're there to do is to just, like, fight any leftist of any kind from, like, social democrats, like, anarchists. And again, this is very much a proto-Operation Condor. It's the same goals, the same tactics, the same command structure, and, like, so the command structure that's left behind in Greece, for example, it becomes known as Prometheus, and it plays a huge role both in the Greek Civil War and also in Greece's 1967 right-wing military coup.
We never talk about that.
Yeah. We never do. It's really like the whole history of Greece from that period of the military coup. It's like, yeah, like Churchill, World War II was happening, and then Churchill was like, oh my god, the communists are gonna win, and so he just like put the Nazis back in charge, and the Nazis started doing the Holocaust again.
Yeah, there's a very fun history of Churchill in Greece that is fine.
It's fine and good, and nothing bad ever happened from it. There wasn't another military dictatorship. They didn't kill enormous numbers of people. And you know, there's also like there's stuff here. Part of what's going on here is, I'm just gonna read this from McSherry. Washington insisted on a secret clause in the North Atlantic Treaty. This is the treaty that forms NATO, requiring the secret services of all joining nations to establish their own branches of the secret army and oppose communist influence, even if the population voted for communists in free elections.
You love
which
to
is
see
great.
It.
Freedom and democracy, people.
That's good shit. That's good freedom. Nothing says freedom and democracy like secret armies.
Yeah. Well, I should mention, it's not formally part of like, it's not formally, like, one of the things that's considered part of Gladio or, like, the state behind networks, but they do literally the same thing in Japan, too.
Yeah.
That's where the Japanese ruling party, modern ruling party, comes from. And, oh boy, do these state behind networks oppose communism and free elections. They rig the elections in Greece, then they rig the elections in Italy, so the communists can't win. But, you know, like, while all this is happening, right, on a macro level, what is happening here is that the CIA is giving a bunch of Nazis guns and high explosives. And when I say Nazis, like, what I mean is that, to take a random example, the State Behind Network in West Germany literally hired Klaus Barbie and was composed of ex-members of the SS.
We have talked about that because Klaus Barbie was also integral in the creation of the modern CIA for some similar reasons.
Yeah, and then also showed up doing a cocaine coup funded by the Moonies and a bunch of other world people in Bolivia.
That 1980. One was fine.
it was good. It was good and fine. And in Italy in particular, this whole, like, give fascist guns thing goes exactly as badly as you would expect it to. In 1972, someone sets off a car bomb in a small Italian village called Pettiano. And originally this is blamed on the Red Brigades, who are this sort of, like, leftist, like, urban guerrilla group that later turns out to be infiltrated to, like, all hell. But we're not actually going to get into the Red Brigades here, because if we did, and if I actually had done the Morrow kidnapping in this episode would be like 35 hours long, and also I'd be found dead in my driveway like about 3 weeks from now.
You'd be found covered in shrapnel made out of pasta.
Yeah.
Because it's Italians.
The thing about this, like, I am joking about this, but there legitimately were, like, a not insignificant number of people who tried to write about this and were killed. So
yeah, sure. It's found great. With gabagool jammed down their throat.
Now,
choked to death on a, what's something else that's Italian?
Pepperoni.
Pepperoni. Murdered by being historically bad at fielding cavalry. That's also very Italian. Roman Empire joke.
I'm really
terrible
at
cavalry.
I'm really proud of you for not bringing up spicy meatball.
Ah, the spicy meatball.
You know, my original plan for this was I was just going to read every single name in an Italian accent and do no other Italian jokes, but because luckily I have Robert here to do the Italian jokes for me.
My life is an Italian joke.
Based.
Mm-hmm. And it is based.
Bread pilled, I guess. Pasta
fucking terrible Italian bread.
So, okay, so anyway. There's this bombing, right? It kills some people. It specifically, it's like targeted against the police. And Okay, so the rubber kids get blamed for this, and the immediate response to the Italian government is they do a mass crackdown on the left. They arrest hundreds of communists. And now it turns out, Robert, that bombing, not done by the Red Brigades. Instead, actually done by a fascist group named Ordine Nuovo, or New Order. The guy responsible for this, Vincente Visoguerra, was tried by an Italian judge in the 80s. And he revealed some stuff. And by some stuff, I mean, it turns out that the bombing was done by C4 taking from Gladio weapons caches, which the prosecutors knew about because they immediately covered it up to blame someone else.
See, that's very Italian of them.
Yeah.
I mean, although, Chris, you do have to take into account, given the way C4 looks, this may have been an accidental bombing because it looks a lot like pasta dough. They might have just been making a ravioli, you know?
Sometimes you make the ravioli and you blow up the carbonara.
Gabagool. Oh, no. Italians.
So it turns out the bombing... Yeah, so it's done with Gladio weapons caches. It's almost certainly was directed by the Italian government, and this becomes the opening salvo, most known as a strategy of tension, which is the government carrying out terrorist attacks from the fascist right, and then staging attacks that are claimed to be from the communist and anarchist left. So you get people, you know, scared enough so they'll trust the government and reject the incredibly powerful Italian left, which they spend this whole time like smearing as terrorists.
Yes, and this has all come down to us today in the fact that anytime people on the left do something cool and illegal, you get a bunch of assholes on Twitter being like, this is Operation Gladio and, style false flag. You know, yeah,
the thing I need to point out about this to people who believe this, if you go back and look at the history of what these guys are doing, it wasn't like they weren't like graffitiing someone's driveway. Like, they were doing train bombings.
Yeah, they were bombing. They were massacring civilians.
They killed like hundreds of people. Like guys, the level of thing that they're doing is just, it's not even remotely applicable to what's happening now.
It's stuff that's objectively bad as opposed to stuff that's objectively based.
Yeah, like they don't do anything cool. The only thing that they do specifically in order to discredit the left is kill civilians. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, maybe like, look, if you want to get all conspiracy brain about it, like, I don't know, maybe
for
in
the
5 years,
massacring civilians, bad, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're
and
on.
And like, okay, the other thing I want to point out is that, like, okay, so there were a bunch of conspiracy theorists in Italy in the 70s and 80s when this is happening. Right. And the conspiracy theory they have is that the Red Brigades don't exist. And that, like, they're entirely fictitious and the government has made up a group of fake terrorists. And this is not true at all. The Red Brigades were a real thing. They got it. All the conspiracy theorists who were living in like the most conspiracy ridden part of like history ever all got it completely wrong. So you guys also don't have it right. And the things that are we're not literally living in exactly the same thing of American Gladio. It's not the same thing. Please stop.
Oh, by the way, also the Italian Red Brigades, not named the Red Brigades because of communism, but because of pasta sauce.
Yeah, definitely. Uh-huh. They were also called the Marinara Brigades.
Yeah, the Marinara Brigades. That's what everyone was locally known as.
Yeah, yeah. So it's because they turn people into chunky marinara.
Mm-hmm.
So
delicious.
Vici Guerra, who's the guy who is put on trial for this bombing, claims that New Order is actually a cat's paw for NATO and the CIA, which, like, okay, so, like, partially he's doing this because he's been arrested for a bombing, and he's like, how do I get out of this? The CIA told us to. But, you know, but also, on the other hand, right, the bombs that he used to make this are from CIA Gladio caches, so draw your own conclusions about who's responsible for this and how he got a hold of a bunch of weapons from CIA NATO stay behind network caches. And it turns out that New Order and another fascist group called Avanguardia Nazionale, or National
Vanguard.
Yeah, these people are also heavily involved in Operation Condor. And when I say heavily involved, what I mean is that one of the members, actually, I think he's a member of both groups, is this guy named Stefano Dile Ciali. His name has two I's in it, and there's a vowel in the middle.
It's Italian names. Incomprehensible. Not real people names. Yeah.
So this guy, Pinochet met with him personally to talk about the assassination that he was trying to do. The assassination that he's trying to do is the failed assassination of Christian Democratic politician Bernardo Leighton. The Christian Democrats are kind of weird here because, like, the Chilean Christian Democrats originally support the coup against Allende. But then, like, Pinochet takes over, and they were like, this whole Pinochet thing, maybe it's bad. And so they turn against Pinochet, And here's McSherry and what happened next. Avanguardia Nazionale and Ordine Nuevo also collaborated in Condor operations. Assassins from Avanguardia Nazionale, the terrorist organization of Italian neo-fascist Stefano Della Chiani, attempted the Leighton assassination in Rome. They left the couple for dead after gunning them down in the street. The couple was severely wounded, but survived. Aldo Tessai, the leader of Ordine Nuevo and Avanguardia Nazionale, boasted that Deliciani and his Italian fascists coordinated with the Chilean National Intelligence Directorate, as well as the secret services of the Franco regime in Spain, and admitted that his forces carried out the Leighton attack at Dina's request. So Stefano Deliciani, by the way, so while wanted by the Italian police for this assassination, shows up at the Latin America Anti-Communist Confederation's meeting in Buenos Aires in 1980. And this is like a recurring theme for these people, for Italian fascist terrorists. One of New Order's like highest ranking members was this guy named Elio Massagardi, who's like, he did a bunch of terrorist attacks and like bank robberies in Italy, both Italy and France. And so he flees to Paraguay after another judge attempts to sort of like prosecute these New Order guys. And he winds up getting shot like while he's in his car is stuck in a traffic jam in Rome. And at this point, Elio Massagardi just like runs away, and you know, he goes to Paraguay, and then he shows up as part of the European delegation of the World Anti-Communist League's meeting in Asunción in 1979. And again, while he's at this meeting, he's like near the top of the Interpol most wanted list, and he's just at this meeting, like chilling. Now, the other part of what's going on here, and this is the part that like actually breaks people's brains, is an organization called the P2 Masonic Lodge or Propaganda Due. So I should make this clear from the top. P2 is a rogue Masonic lodge that was expelled by the Masons before they do the stuff we're about to talk about. And it's ran by this guy named Licio Guelli, who's like, he's an old school fascist. Like this is a guy who at 17 years old went to Spain and fought for Franco in the Spanish Civil War, and then like joined the SS. And P2 operates as this kind of like shadow state inside the Italian state. It has like a bunch of members in sort of various parts of the Italian government, including the military and the intelligence services. It buys the country's largest newspaper. And by like the late 70s and like the very beginning of the 80s, it's basically running the Italian state. But hilariously, in 1981, the Italian police are raiding this guy's house for like completely unrelated corruption stuff. And they find a briefcase that just literally has the PT organization's plan to take over the government in it. And they also find in Licio Guelli's like apartment when they raid it later, they find a list that has everyone in the organization. And the people on this in this thing are wild. There's the heads and deputy heads of four different Italian intelligence services, the chief of the general staff of the army. There's a bunch of people who were like very senior members of the Argentinian junta. Stefano Deliciani, the fascist we've been talking about, who showed up at the World Anti-Communist League meeting, he's in this. The guy who founded AAA, that the Argentinian death squad from last episode, also in this. And then the most famous member of this group is a guy named Silvio Berlusconi. It's great. Great. He was part of the secret rogue Masonic lodge that took control of the government and was like planning to do a fascist coup and take everything over to destroy communism. And to get an indication, if you want like a sneak peek of where this is eventually going and who wins this whole war, Silvio Berlusconi was the longest serving prime minister in the history of Italy. Longest serving prime minister after Benito Mussolini. Yeah, so this is going great. The P2 stuff is like all over the place. It's really hard to sort out like who exactly did what. Like there are evidence from some of these trials that are like happening now, like in 2022. Evidence is still coming out. What we can say is that they seem to have been involved in the 1980 Bologna train bombing, which killed 85 people and injured another 200 people. And because it's a bombing, it was initially blamed by anarchists, but lo and behold, evidence now suggests it was actually fascists using Gladio explosives backed by P2's contacts in Italian intelligence. There's like, they do other stuff. There's decent evidence they planted a fake story about Jimmy Carter's brother meeting PLO leader Yasser Arafat in the U.S. press to try to get Ronald Reagan elected.
Oh, yeah. I mean, And really, they could have just, well, we'll talk about the bank, the crime bank that Jimmy Carter was affiliated yeah. with later. But that's another story for another day.
Well, speaking of crime banks, I'm not going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about Banco Ambrosiano and Robert Calvi, the man known as God's Banker, turning up dead under Blackfriars Bridge. Because if I talk about this, I'll be here until like 2077. And also 3,000 people will just like fall from the ceiling with knives and assassinate me. So, but what I can say about this is that Gladio, you know, as much as people sort of exceptionalize what Gladio is basically a mirror version of the US's own parallel, so to stay behind networks abroad. And these are things like the First Observation Group, which is a US Special Forces group that was deployed to do terrorism in South Vietnam, like back in the 50s, when the US was still, you know, doing this whole thing that they claimed they weren't in South Vietnam.
The 50s is literally, yeah, anyway, whatever.
Robert, you know what else is a model for fascist death squads?
Well, this podcast, actually. Sophie and I sat down to plan how Behind the Bastards was going to work, you know, first question we asked was like, how are we going to organize the division of labor to make this work? And both at the same time, it was amazing. Instantly looked each other right in the eye and said at the same time, fascist death squads. And that's why we still use that organizational method today for this show.
Yeah, and this is mm-hmm. why we're sponsored by and the. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Primarily, elements of the all united in operation of fascist death squads, which we support 100% here at Behind the Bastards, the Dead Squad podcast.
No notes.
Thank you, Sophie. Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So, for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. What's the catch? There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. All plans come with high-speed data, unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/behind. That's mintmobile.com/behind. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/behind. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit
time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
We're back. Oh, and you know, thinking about fascist death squads makes me think about death squads.
You just really wanted to do it.
I did, okay. Sophie. Uh-huh. You know what I love?
Making our editor bleep things.
I do. I do it just for you, Sophie.
Well, it's really no big deal for me. I just type an edit note.
I know.
I just want you to
feel like you're part of the team, Sophie.
I run the team, Robert. I am the team.
That doesn't sound like something I'd hear, because Sophie, that's very confusing to me, because I take a lot of credit for running the team. So, you know,
you're
pretty weird.
You're sitting on the bench most of the time, but okay.
Well, speaking of benches, Babe Ruth.
You saw somebody list that on the Twitter thread that I posted about you knowing a sports reference. That doesn't count.
Okay, well, let's return to the story.
You know, I could do a Babe Ruth segue here, but I'm just not going to. So while all of this stuff is going on in Italy, the league is getting up to just some other unfathomable atrocities across Latin America. And one of the main engines of these atrocities, it turns out, is the KMT back in Taiwan. Now, last episode, we talked about how the KMT was the original death squad party. And the Taiwanese spend most of the Cold War using the World Anti-Communist League to sort of export their model of anti-communist death squad party abroad. The KMT call this, there's sort of like, they have like a method, right? They have this thing, and the method is called political warfare. And this is essentially, political warfare is the KMT basically going, okay, so like, what if we did over the top parody of communist indoctrination, but like, at, like, to our own people for anti-communism? Like, they have Soviet-style communists, like, literally, so like, commissars, whose job it is to, like, maintain ideological and party discipline in the military, but they're anti-communist this time. Like, everyone is trained to spy on each other.
We did it.
Yeah, it's great. It's like we've defeated communism by taking every bad aspect of like anything you can find in a communist state and just doing it for anti-communism? Question mark. They developed this model of like war called the War of the Masses, which is literally their version of Maoist guerrilla warfare. Mm-hmm.
It is awesome how all of these guys like crib particularly from Mao,
A
bunch of the ones in the United States, because there's like, yeah. Well. Clearly it works.
Yeah, he was really good at guerrilla revolutions.
You gotta give Mao credit where it's due.
Yeah.
The man had his areas of expertise.
Yeah, it was exactly that. And nothing else to do with agriculture or...
No.
Oh,
famously,
boy.
famously good at agriculture, the guy who reads Starving Ghosts.
Yeah. So
good book.
Yeah, the KMT is like it's like a right wing parody of what a communist police state is, but it's anti communist, and they're also huge on this thing called counterterror. And I think most people listening to this, you're going to hear counterterror and assume that I'm talking about like some counterterrorism thing, and like kind like there are counterterrorism stuff that is just counterterror, but counterterror.
I've known a lot of professional counterterrorism people and hung out with them while they did counterterrorism. And boy, it looks a lot like terrorism.
Yeah, counterterrorism.
Talk
like,
about the Iraqis. Yeah, counterterrorism forces one other day.
The thing with this, right, is counterterror, mm-hmm. counterterror is just cutting out the whole sort of middleman thing. Counterterror is just the state literally going, we are the terrorists now. Our plan to win this war is we are going to terrorize the population through kidnapping, assassinations, and massacres until they don't support guerrillas anymore.
Hooray!
Yeah, the KMT are like pioneers of this. The U.S. Army teaches this to people, and everyone we're about to talk about is just obsessed with counterterror. Like this is like 80% of what they do is, oh my god, what if we did every atrocity we're accusing our enemies of, but like significantly worse? And you know, one of the places they learn this stuff is the Political Warfare Academy in Taipei, which is, you know, it starts taking students from militaries all across Latin America.
Why don't we have a Political Warfare Academy, Sophie?
That's true. We should have one.
It's in the budget for next year.
Okay. All right. Good. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sophie, we need to make this very clear right now. I am going to run the Political Warfare Academy so that when all the officers that I train will be personally loyal to me so that I can successfully overthrow Robert in a military coup.
Yeah, this seems like a good plan for me.
It's so funny that you think that he would need to be the one that's overthrown when I am in charge.
Oh no, I've always just been the figurehead of this.
Here's the thing. I want to be the figurehead. I don't want to do the actual work, which is why I'm not overthrowing Sophie.
No, I want to be like
that. Seems awful, dear God.
I just want to be the podcast equivalent of what was one of the guys who was just a figurehead?
What's his name?
I was thinking Star Wars, the fake Queen Amidala.
Yes, I was going to say with Star Wars, I want to be the I don't even know enough about Star Wars. Whatever, let's continue.
Okay.
So you have this Taiwanese school, the Americas thing. And like, okay, so there are a lot of people who get trained in a lot of like, you know, schools to do counterterror. But like, okay, even people who've been to the School of Americas, like they talk to people who come back from political warfare training and are like, those guys got weird. Like they're like too into this. You see, it's like people who are in death squads, like we'll talk about people who are like came back from Taiwan and were like, those guys are a bit weird. Those guys are a bit much. And you know, the KMT starts like exporting this model. I'm going to quote from inside the league here about like what they were doing. First, through its liaisons in the league, the KMT identified the political party in a Latin country that was the most militantly anti-communist. The party chosen to be represented in the league is invariably the one that has already proven its anti-communist mettle or displays the ability and will to do so. Following the KMT model, the chosen party establishes a nationwide intelligence and counter-terror network. These paramilitary groups are then gradually incorporated into the nation's armed forces. This is usually accomplished when, in a moment of national crisis, the army turns to these civilian bands for support, or when it is too impotent to curb them. One of the parties they choose is the MLN in Guatemala, which is founded by this guy named Mario Salvador Alarcón. And this is a guy who once said,
that sounds like an airport Italian restaurant right there.
I mean, he's definitely fascist enough to be an Italian
to work at an airport.
Yeah, two incredibly fascist places. This is a guy. Okay, I'm going to read this quote from him. I could perhaps accept the label of fascist, Sandoval told a French reporter in 1981, in the historical sense of the word, were it not for the fact that it refers to a type of socialism, albeit national socialism. So this is a guy who fascism is too socialist for him?
Okay, buddy.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And this is the guy who is the head of the Guatemalan chapter.
Coming after the Nazi party from the right.
Yeah, no, that's literally his thing. And this is the guy who's the Guatemalan, like the head of the Guatemalan chapter of the World Anti-Communist League for like basically his entire life. Mario Sandoval Alarcón he's an old school like Guatemalan right winger. Like he's one of the guys who like did the 1954 CIA back coup against the democratically elected Jacobo Arbenz. So like he's been around, and he's also one of the people behind the White Hand, which is basically they're the most feared and bloodthirsty death squad in Colombia until like the army fully takes over and starts doing the genocide stuff against the Maya population in the 1980s. Now, lest you think Sandoval Alarcón did not do the genocide, he absolutely is. Anytime you read anything about the genocide, like the first part of the genocide is them talking about like the stuff that he did in the 60s and 70s. Including just like the White Hand, they have this fairly famous thing where like in the 1970s there's all these like agricultural cooperatives forming, and the White Hand, and again these are just people like forming co-ops, and the White Hand just walks in and slaughters them all. I haven't been able to figure out the exact extent to which he was involved in the full-on genocide that starts in 1980. I mean, there's no way he didn't want the genocide to happen, but the thing about it that's weird is that like his political enemies are in power when the genocide starts. And I mean, you know, this is in some sense like a reflection of how deeply just like genocidal the entire sort of Guatemalan political class is, right? Because like his enemies get put in power and they still do a genocide. But I mean, he's definitely still killing people. Like there's definitely his escort just still murdering people in the streets. It's kind of unclear exactly how involved he was in the army, just like exterminating people. But you know who was actively involved at like on the level of directly backing the military? The KMT. So,
I thought you were doing an ad plug, and I was going to say the products and services that support this podcast, which
no,
they were.
Not an ad. I mean, probably yes. Like, mm-hmm. But yeah, the KMT specifically here. So, all right. I guess I previewed this last episode when I was talking about the whole thing about how the U.S. like refused to recognize the People's Republic of China as a legitimate government of China until 1979. And 1979, the U.S. finally flips and like recognizes the PRC as a legitimate government of China instead of recognizing like the KMT's rump government in Taiwan. And almost all of the world's like
rump.
Yeah. Look, like almost all the countries in the world recognize the PRC. One of the ones that doesn't, I mean, you know, and the people who don't, it's like Rhodesia and like South Africa. Like apartheid South Africa, and one of the other countries is Guatemala, and so Taiwan and Guatemala are incredibly close political allies. The Guatemalan army like sends officers.
Well, but they're so have such directly tied interests. Taiwan, Guatemala, both.
Well, they both really like killing
in the
communists.
South Pacific. that's the case.
That's the thing. They really like killing communists, and so yeah, the Guatemalan army sends a bunch of officers to Taiwan's political warfare academy. Taiwan sells them weapons and sends military advisors and trainers to Guatemala. And so
it's always beautiful when people come together around shared interests.
Yeah. International solidarity between
solidarity for, okay. Probably.
I'm going to start a rousing chorus of the people's flag is deepest red.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And so one of the things that what ends up happening here is that there's a bunch of Taiwanese military advisors. There's Taiwanese political warfare pamphlets like floating around everywhere. And all of this is going on when the Guatemalan government starts doing the genocide.
LMAO. That's not an LMAO situation.
No, it's real bad. I mean, we'll get to something that's kind of LMAO in a second. But okay. In the immediate thing here, by the end of this genocide, the Guatemalan government has killed 200,000 people and wiped their entire cultures that are gone. Their whole languages that are just wiped out. Like it's like,
yeah, if you've ever,
unspeakably horrifying.
Spend any time in Guatemala and talk to some like older people. Like there are towns, significant chunks of them where like the army is still not allowed in.
Yeah. Right?
Like they are effectively like autonomous because, the genocide. Yeah, as a result of like the fucking genocide, like fucking an experience you will regularly have, or at least 10 years ago you'd regularly have, is like turning a street corner and there's just 40 or 50 people lining a street, all missing legs and arms and hands. And it's not because they all had separate accidents. Guatemala's fucking dope as shit. Guatemalan people, very nice. The degree to which that country got fucked over is one of the things that makes me angriest in the world.
Yeah, anyway. It is breathtakingly horrible. And as a side note here, when the UN eventually in the 90s does an investigation of the genocide, and Taiwan refuses to cooperate. And to this day, to the best of my knowledge, the documents about exactly what Taiwan was doing during the genocide are still classified. So
good.
That's fun. That's great. Yeah, so Mario Sandoval Alarcon's recruitment into the league, like, it wasn't just about sort of Taiwanese diplomatic relations. He's brought in as, and they literally call him the grandfather, the godfather of death squads. Like, everyone just calls him the godfather. It's
fucking Italians. Okay, sure.
He's brought in to train other death squad leaders. And one of those guys is Roberto. See, this guy's a French name. I think it's Debusson or something like that.
Debusson.
Roberto Debusson. And he is a guy who would say things like, and he said this to a journalist, quote, "You Germans were very intelligent. You realize that the Jews were responsible for the spread of communism and you began to kill them."
Oh boy.
Yeah. And so his nickname is Blowtorch Bob. And
Jesus.
Robert, yeah. Do you want to guess why his nickname is Blowtorch Bob?
I really don't want to guess. I'm gonna be fair with you. I would prefer not to guess on that.
I will just tell you it's because he was famous for just using blowtorch to torture prisoners.
Well,
yeah, cool. he's
this is actually
guy.
A similarity that he has with our producer Sophie.
I don't use a blowtorch.
Okay, well, it's a can of hairspray with a lighter, Sophie. It works similarly.
Well, at least get your facts straight if you're going to accuse me of something.
This is how we handle problems like that time. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this joke.
Neither do I.
Please continue.
So Roberto de Bucion, he goes to the league's meeting in Buenos Aires in 1980, and he asks for help running death squads. And he becomes Sandoval Alarcon's like protege. And this he also goes to Taiwan and spends time at the KMT's Political Warfare Academy. Here's from inside the league about his time there. In an interview with a French reporter in 1987, De Bucion said that the courses he took in Beitou, which is Beitou's a district in Taiwan.
Yeah, Beitou. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, where a bunch of people who came over from China like wind up. This is where the academy is. In 1977 was, quote, the best class I ever studied. Those lessons are what I applied when I organized. We started organizing civic groups. Political war is different from military war. It is different in its space. The political war is defined in 360 degrees. The military war is a war in space, but there is one military front, one theater of operation. In the military war, the young people could participate, young men especially. In political warfare, everyone participates. Political warfare, De Bucion said, is psychological warfare against the enemy. I started psychological warfare against the communists. I denounced their program, their treason, their infiltrations into government. The political warfare was a complement to the armed fight. And so Taiwan is not the only country that's supporting this guy. At that same league meeting in 1980, he meets with representatives of the Argentinian police state to like ask for more training to like fund his death squads. And, you know, we should go back to Operation Condor for a second, because remember, like, this is how Condor started, right? Condor starts with a bunch of people at CIL meetings, like, coming together and going, hey, we should go communist together. And, you know, the thing about Condor is that Condor had originally been a project of what's called the Southern Cone, which is, like, a region of Latin America covering, like, Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, sometimes, like, Paraguay and part of Brazil. And what this 1980 meeting of the CIL was doing was exporting a new version of Condor north to Central America. This is sending it to El Salvador, to Honduras, to Guatemala, to Nicaragua. Here's from the predatory state. The 1980 WACL meeting, well, Anti-Communist League, meeting in Buenos Aires seemed to have been a defining event in exporting the Condor system from the Southern Cone. The meeting brought together various right-wing forces, intelligence agents, and military officers, including many involved in Condor, to strategize about ways to accelerate the world anti-communist crusade. In March 1980, the Sandinista media announced that the CIA was interfering in Nicaragua and El Salvador and training former National Guard troops in Honduras. So, De Bucion, like, gets his death squad training, and a year later in 1981, he founds ARENA, which is his own sort of Salvadorian death squad party. And then he also does something that puts him in a very rare category of bastard. He kills a saint.
Ooh, had they been sainted when he killed them? Or
no,
was
getting murdered is how he became a saint.
Dope. Well, then he did the guy, I mean, kind of did him a favor.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like he would rather have been alive than a dead saint. But, well, I don't know. I will not claim to understand the mind of the high level Catholic clergy.
Yeah.
I was about to say, I don't know if
I mean, I'm
going to
guess not. Because that's like being the LeBron James.
Okay, now we're just Catholicism. Repeating names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we gotta give you more names so you have better talking points.
I just need to watch that Adam Sandler movie again. Okay. The one with the footballs. And the tall guy, and he's Spanish. It's a good movie. You should watch it. It's a pretty good movie, Sophie.
So that saint is a guy you probably actually have heard of. That's Archbishop Oscar Romero.
Oh, who, yeah. He lived a long life. Yeah.
Yeah, he lived a long life until 1980 when De Bucion had him assassinated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as McSherry points out, like, his assassination really looks like a Condor killing. Like, mm-hmm. it has all of the sort of elements of it. And, you know, Dan Busey like has taken his lessons to heart really fast. And this whole project that he's doing, this whole thing, he's trying to get everyone who's been doing the sort of like training death squads to like help him make his own death squads. This works incredibly well. His death squads, which are trained by Argentina and Taiwan, mentored by Mario Sandoval out of Crone. They kill something like 40,000 people during this El Salvadorian civil war. Yeah. Like, and 40,000 is like a kind of low estimate. It's possible it was much. I've seen people blame. I mean, okay, so like, there's a question as to like how many people were killed by the death squads and how many people were actually killed by the military. And I've seen estimates that are like 20,000 people higher than this because they're attributing like all of the people killed.
Yeah, death squad numbers are like when people ask me how many beers I've had at like 3:30 in the morning numbers. Right, you're going to be off by a margin.
Yeah, and you're
going to be under.
Yeah, yeah, you're almost certainly there's more of them, and you know. So this is what we call in the trade extremely bad. Now, Robert, as you well know, Ronald Reagan and his staff sold weapons to Iran to secure prisoner releases and fund Nicaraguan death squads. But do you know who else sold weapons and questionable arms deals to fund death squads? Our sponsor is the...
Uh-huh, that's right. With the... We believe pandas are good. And so is arming paramilitary groups.
Yeah. And I think most people will think that I'm joking here. I'm actually literally not. They actually literally did this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, go read the BuzzFeed article. Yeah,
and
great.
It was
seven countries. Death squads in seven. I think it was seven countries. I haven't looked into this in too long. But
Chris, I don't like death squads being in seven countries funded by the.
Yes,
that's how you sound. All right, here's ads. Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
We're back. Do you like my Chris voice, Chris?
Yeah, I feel like my register is slightly higher than that.
It is. I'm going to be honest. The same as my Sophie voice. I have one voice that I do for people.
This is why you're a professional.
This is why I'm the professional. This is exactly right. This is why I'm the leader of this junta.
speaking of juntas, actually not speaking of juntas, I guess the Argentinian junta is going to be involved later. But when we left off, the U.S. was about to get involved in a series of incredibly sketchy arm deals with Iran and Hezbollah in order to fund death squads. But
what you like to hear.
Unfortunately, before we can know, it's not. I mean, yeah. I guess you could probably find people on the left who are like Iran-Contra was good because they were funding, because they were giving weapons to Iran. But then there's the whole funding the Contras thing. So it's kind of like.
It is fun. There's a lot of like. When you like look at, I don't know, the kind of lazy left wing analysis of the like the tanky style, like shitty left wing analysis where like, you know, everyone wants, you know, their clear set good guys and bad guys. And when you look at the reality, which is like, boy, China and the United States wound up backing a lot of the same militant groups during the Reagan years. It kind of kept happening over and over again.
Yeah.
Weird. Weird that the Reagan administration. Anyway, whatever. Yeah.
It's a good time. Now, but before we can get any further into Iran-Contra, we have to introduce the last major World Anti-Communist League figure we're talking about, and also Iran-Contra co-conspirator, Major General John K. Siglab. So John K. Siglab is the most spooked out spook who ever tortured an innocent civilian.
Boy, there is competition for that title.
I'm not even gonna like. I literally can't do his entire resume here because it would take up like 40 to 50% of the entire episode, which is be me reading his resume. He starts as an OSS guy behind Nazi lines in World War II, and then he gets transferred to the Pacific to teach Chinese forces guerrilla tactics against the Japanese. And would that he had died a hero there, because his next posting is as the CIA desk chief for China in 1949. There's a lot of his things in his career that I read and don't make any sense to me. He somehow also was involved in the establishment of the Ranger Training Center at Fort Benning. He then becomes the deputy station chief of the CIA in South Korea during the Korean War. And this is the thing I don't understand at all. So he's the deputy station chief of the CIA, right? He somehow also is commanding a combat battalion. I have no idea how this works. Don't ask me. It's baffling. I don't get it.
Yeah, that's a little odd. Okay.
I have no idea. This guy is just like the spook. Here's from inside the league about what he got up to next. As commander of the Joint Unconventional Warfare Task Force, known as MACSOG, great acronym, by the way, MACSOG, really? Siglab was one of the on-site commanders of Operation Phoenix, the American-directed assassination and counter-terror program. And Robert, do you remember that episode that Garrison did on Eel Horse?
I do.
Yeah.
Although I will tell you, a fan came up to me during one of the live events I did recently and informed me that there's a specific kind of antibiotic that they give. This fan is a horse person. She told me there's an antibiotic that they give horses that, if you eat the meat, it will give you horrible cancer immediately. So, that's gonna limit the number of, going to just steal a horse from somebody's horse farm. Just capture one horse and eat it. But now I feel like I have to be careful to make sure it hasn't been given this antibiotic that will turn it into cancer meat, because
I mean,
that'll probably be bad.
Yeah, but on the other hand, what a way to go. I ate cancer-inducing horse meat.
Yeah, I got horse meat cancer.
This is something somebody like 1742 dies of.
Yeah.
Chris actively encouraging Robert to eat cancer meat so that he can overthrow him.
I was going to make Garrison eat most of the horse.
This is called political warfare, Sophie.
I know. I see it happening, and I'm proud.
Yeah, doing a horse meat gladio.
Yeah.
You remember the part about the the thing I remember about that episode about Eel Horse was Garrison stopping me after a meeting and saying, "Chris, have you ever heard of an ancient Chinese remedy of people sticking eels up their asses?" And the only thing I could think of that involved East Asia and people with eels was the thing about how people would rape people with eels during the Vietnam War.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that was this guy. That's him. Good. He's the guy raping people with eels. And you know, this is this guy. The thing he's doing, Project Phoenix, their job is specifically to assassinate civilians. It's to find civilians who are sympathetic to North Vietnam, to like North Vietnam, and just kill them. That's what he's doing. A bunch of the work from Project Phoenix, which again, like, he's the guy running, it finds its way into this army manual that's passed out of the School of the Americas. That's about like how to do terrorism and how to assassinate people. And eventually that gets leaked and there's this huge scandal, but it doesn't affect him at all. He eventually goes back to the army at some point. And this is everything. He flips randomly back and forth between the CIA, the army, and like the Rangers. And I don't know what's going on with this guy's career. It's incredibly bizarre spook shit. But he's made the chief of staff of U.S. forces in South Korea, but he gets like incredibly pissed off that Carter wants to pull troops out. So he like publicly denounces the president, and Carter's just like, you can't do that. Like, you're a general. You know, and so he just fires him. But this, of course, makes him like incredibly popular with the U.S. right. And he eventually helps found a new American chapter of the World Anti-Communist League and becomes the head of the league. Here's some inside the league. The new American chapter, the United States Council for World Freedom, USCWF, terrible acronym, born. Yeah, like Cal is a good acronym. USCWF, sure. Terrible. Zero Trash. Out of 10. Jesus Christ, come on. So the USCWF was born, facilitated by a loan of nearly $20,000 from Taiwan. What SingLab was able to create was a body of powerful.
You could really make money go further back then.
Oh yeah, no, like $20,000. You could do Iran-Contra with $20,000.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, Sophie and I recently put $20,000 into a series of militant endeavors, and we barely assassinated the former prime minister of Japan. Podcast finish episodes. Oop! Oh,
not even going to make the joke.
Nearly got us in trouble on that one. Nearly got us in trouble on that one. Pulled it out though. Nobody.
No words.
We're fine.
Dodging prosecution like Neo in the Matrix.
That's right.
Boy, howdy. Let's continue.
Dodging
this.
Prosecution like Shinzo Abe didn't dodge anyway.
Robert,
continue. What?
Chris, please.
So SingLab is able to create like a powerful and respected body of American conservatives, the likes of which the League had never seen before. As the USCWF grew, this new League chapter came to include high-ranking former officers of the American Army and Intelligence Community. Lieutenant General Daniel O. Graham, former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, became its vice chairman, while a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Albert Kion was its treasurer. On the advisory board was General Louis Walt, former commander of Marine Corps forces in Vietnam, and Ray Sleeper, retired Air Force colonel. So this new American chapter.
You know, somebody needs to do an R.E.M. song, like a parody of an R.E.M. song about Ray Sleeper using the R.E.M. song Day Sleeper to talk about this. Anyway.
That is not the R.E.M. parody. I thought you were going to go for that. That was better than I expected.
Ray Sleeper, Day Sleeper, which is a great R.E.M. song. Don't get me wrong, but it would also be a funny. Anyway, somebody out there can figure it out.
Yeah, we'll let someone else do that. And you know, this is like the most fetted out organization I've ever encountered. And SingLab had already been a liaison to the Reagan administration. In 1979, he and another CIA guy named Daniel Graham went to Guatemala to convince Reagan to back the government. Mm-hmm. So Reagan does, and guess what? Death squad killings immediately increase. And, you know, everyone else in the Republican Party sort of falls in line. They're like, oh, this is fine. And here's what happened next. The election of Reagan coincided with the bloodiest outbreak of Guatemalan death squad actions in history. Almost 500 deaths a month, almost all attributed to the right, were being reported by the American embassy. But even that figure was considered low by most other monitoring groups. Piles of mutilated corpses were being discovered every morning throughout the country, and a concerted campaign to eliminate the centrist parties was underway in Guatemala City. From July 1980 to June 1981, 76 leaders of the Christian Democratic Party and 10 officials of the Social Democratic Revolutionary Front were assassinated. Most were murdered by gunfire from passing cars, the trademark of the MLN. And this is all happening at the same time as the genocide, which Reagan is like, yeah, no, go ahead and do this. And so Reagan's big thing is that he wants to expand death squad activity everywhere. And his primary target is Nicaragua. And I guess we should probably explain why they hate Nicaragua so much. So In 1979, the leftist Sandinistas finally ousted the U.S.-backed Somoza dictatorship and tried to end the literally centuries-old reign of genocidal landowning oligarchs. And this is, because all of the rest of the Latin American ruling class is also genocidal landowning oligarchs, this sparks a lot of what we've been talking about. Yeah, like the genocide in Guatemala, the massacres in El Salvador, a lot of this stuff was triggered by the right-wingers just sort of like seeing someone else being like, hey, maybe you guys shouldn't have the total literally power over life and death and the ability to murder anyone you want in order to keep your land. And they just lose it and start doing genocides. And the another country they turn into a war zone is Honduras. Now, the man largely responsible for this, at least initially, was Gustavo Alvarez Martinez, a School of the Americas graduate who was also trained by the Argentinian junta and their own sort of dirty war stuff. Gustavo Alvarez Martinez is floating around the same sort of like CAL milieu as like all the other death squad guys we've talked about. And at that same 1980 conference of the League in Buenos Aires, he asks and gets help from the Argentinian army. But what makes Gustavo Alvarez Martinez different from the other death squad leaders that we've talked about is that, you know, okay, so he's absolutely doing death squads along the sort of Argentinian dirty war model, like right down to the sort of Argentinian like triple threat of kidnapping, electroshocks for torture, and throwing people out of helicopters. But he's also attempting to get training for a bunch of Nicaraguan Nicaraguan National Guard people who'd fled across the border into Honduras after like losing the war. And this is enormously successful. Literally everyone is just like falling over themselves to train these people to a new army of Contras. And in 1981, he gets made the head of Honduras's armed forces. And this is where all the sort of threads start to converge. Both the Chileans and the Argentinians help Alvarez Martinez train a unit that becomes known as Battalion 3-16, which was in charge of killing, quote, enemies of the state. After Alvarez Martinez made formal sort of secret contact with the Contras inside Nicaragua itself, he starts like coordinating intelligence with them, and the Argentinians also helped start like training the army of Contras in the camp in Honduras. The Argentinians also start working even closer with the CIA, which is pretty incredible, but they gets closer. Here's from Predatory States. General Guillermo Suarez Mason, the powerful commander of Argentina's First Army Corps, was instrumental in the creation of the Extraterritorial Task Force, or the GTE, a unit of Battalion 601 that carried out secret intelligence operations outside of Argentina. Sanchez Risse said that the GTE was based in Florida with the authorization of the CIA. Suarez Mason himself presided over the Fourth Congress of the Latin American Anti-Communist League, World Anti-Communist League affiliates, in 1980. And the World Anti-Communist League reportedly donated $8 million to pay for the deployment of Argentine officers to Central America. Suarez Mason fled Argentina after transitioning to democracy in 1984. And, according to one human rights organization, Oliver North arranged a false visa for him to enter the U.S. North had been discussing with him the formation of a continental counterinsurgency force, a concept that, again, evokes Operation Condor. So this is great. Argentina's assassination unit is running out of Miami. Oliver North is giving this guy, like, who almost certainly would have just been like shot, entrance into the U.S.
You know what's fun about Oliver North, now that you're saying all this, is that I watched him on TV every night on Fox News when I was a kid.
Yeah,
my parents,
fun.
Big Ollie North fans.
Yeah. It's great that he did so many crimes and he's just still around today doing bad stuff. So not wanting to be left out of this death squad party, Taiwan also sends military advisors to train the Contras in the camps in Honduras. I mean, it's really like everyone is there. Like the Moonies are there. The Soldier of Fortune magazine is flying weapons in, like Sig Labs, like there.
And a couple of them get killed in the helicopter, get shot down.
Which is
that's
extremely
one of my
favorite.
Yeah, there's a really, really fun story of some Soldier of Fortune guys getting the fuck murked out of
them. Yeah,
it's
amazing.
It's pretty dope. Also, there's a pretty good song from a Canadian country music artist I like called Student Visas that's about this period. Check it out.
I don't know. I just want to imagine like just think about like what is it like in these camps? It's like Bohi Pak, who's like the Moon's lieutenant, is like showing up there, and you know he sees some guy from I don't know, he sees like some CIA guy. It's like, hey, Bob, I haven't seen you since we did the cocaine coup in Bolivia. It's like every single person who's ever funded a death squad is just simultaneously running around these camps. And it's like, and you know, part of what's going on here is that SIGLAB, like through the sort of CIL networks we've been talking about that are funding all these death squads, like gets the Reagan administration like fully in touch with training these Contras as well. The Reagan administration is so heavily involved in this stuff that Mario Salvador Alarcón literally shows up at his inaugural ball in 1981, which is great. And the CIA, meanwhile, is so heavily involved in the Contra camps in Honduras that, quoting McSherry, Alvarez, who's the Honduran intelligence guy who's now heading the military running this stuff, was so close to the CIA station chief in Honduras, Douglas Winters, that Winters asked him to be the godfather of his adopted child. Ronald, it's incredible. And Ronald Reagan later awarded him the Legion of Merit in 1983. So this is love Ronald Reagan, a guy who never did anything wrong. And until 1984, this was going great. And by going great, I mean the CIA, Argentina, Taiwan, and the Moonies are like having a great time partying in the jungle and like murdering communists. In Honduras itself, the Nicaraguan Contras have just straight up turned into their own death squads who are murdering people. You know, okay, so like they're a death squad that's supposed to murder people in Nicaragua, right? But they're also just murdering people in Honduras. And then they also just like start killing people like in the Nicaraguan refugee camps in Honduras. So this is a good time. And back in the US, Congress actually does something for once ever and is like, Reagan, you can't give money to these guys who are burning children alive. Which, you know, fairly sensible thing. And so immediately everyone,
woke mob comes for the child burners.
Yeah, look, if burning children I can't remember the name of the thing that part of American tradition and history.
It is a strong American culture.
Yeah, well,
you're not supposed to burn children to death. Who's since whom? Since when? That's what I got to ask.
Yeah, our forefathers burned children to death. Their forefathers burned children to death.
Multiple continents. By God, one of these days we'll burn children to death.
Yeah,
if we're lucky,
it'll be great.
No.
So,
wow, Sophie.
Damn,
can't believe you let that happen.
Noted anti-American.
You are falling down on the job like Scottie Pippen.
Unfortunately, this is a visual gag, but Robert just got a towel thrown at him. It was extremely funny.
Yeah, one of our corporate mandates is that someone always has to be in the room with me to get angry when I say things that I shouldn't.
I did that with my mind. That was so cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You really Professor Xavier'd that one. That's another famous basketball player.
Oh my God. Okay, Chris.
So as we talked about in our episodes with the Moonies, this is the moment that Reverend Moon truly becomes the father of Iran-Contra by personally throwing money and supplies at the Honduran camp to like keep them in the fight when the CIA couldn't. And this is also where John SIGLAB, like currently the head of the World Anti-Communist League, becomes incredibly important. He starts doing this series of fundraisers all over the world. He like goes to Honduras. He's like in these Contra camps. He's like flying in weapons and supplies with a Soldier of Fortune guy. And, you know, he is actually raising some money from the Contras. But this whole thing is really a charade. And this is a key part of how Iran-Contra works, because, you know, you have this figurehead guy who any CIA money can just sort of like go through. And you know, it looks to all the world like, oh, hey, this guy's raising money for freedom fighters. And, you know, as like kind of silly as this whole thing is, this part of the operation is so successful that like no one finds out about it until like the Iran end of Iran-Contra falls apart completely and people start like following the money trails around. And SIGLAB is like deeply involved in this enough that like he's like his liaison like to the Reagan administration is he's just talking to Oliver North. And during the later investigation, there's a real attempt to go after his organization, the United States Council for World Freedom, which, again, is the U.S. chapter of the World Anti-Communist League. They try to go after it. They don't quite get it, but, you know, it's in the documents. And, you know, while all of this is going on, SIGLAB's, like, trying to do a rebrand of the League, because it turns out that having a bunch of people who, if you talk to them, will immediately start screaming about Zionist communism and Jewish conspiracies is I mean, I guess now it's good for recruiting, but like back then it was not great for recruiting people. And, you know, the goal of this is to bring in more mainstream conservatives. And one of these mainstream conservatives is John McCain, who is better known for other work, like telling a reporter, quote, "I hate the gooks. I will hate them as long as I live."
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. He said that. No one ever talks about it because, you know, anti-Asian racism wasn't real until 2020. It was invented by Donald Trump. It wasn't like the previous two people that ran before him were also like unbelievably fucking racist. And so, okay, but like this whole sort of like campaign to like clean the league up, like, you know, it does do one thing, which is that Sig-Lab finally kicks out the CAL. He doesn't, I think it's like 1983. He like finally kicks them out. But, you know, all the Death Squad people like somehow keep showing up to their meetings. The only people who actually get kicked out are the techos because they're just like too openly anti-Semitic. Here's some inside the league about how like deeply these changes actually went. Still, there were problems in selling this new and improved league, for not very much has changed. John Kosak, the Belarusian Nazi collaborator, remains chairman of his delegation. The Croatian Liberation Movement, the International Ustasha Brotherhood that Ante Pavlovic established in Argentina in 1956, was still the official Croatian League chapter, as was the Bulgarian National Front, which had been formed in 1947 by the Bulgarian legionnaires who had advocated the extermination of the nation's Jews. Mario Salvador Alcron, the godfather of Central American death squads, was in attendance. And although Yaroslav Stetsko, the Ukrainian premier who had officiated over the murder of approximately 7,000 residents of Lvov in 1 week in 1941, was too ill to come, his wife, Slava, was there to represent the Ukrainian Nazi collaborators.
Oh, good. I was really worried for a second when you said he was too ill to come, but I'm glad she was able to make that.
Yeah. This new league, it's exactly the same as the old league, except the scale of operations increases, right? Alongside running Iran-Contra, like, anti-communist rebel groups from across the world just start showing up and placing orders for weapons. I'm pretty sure they give weapons to Charles Taylor, although that one was slightly sketchy.
The shoe guy.
Yeah, it's fun. They definitely send weapons to a bunch of like, right-wing, like, incredibly weird guys in Mozambique who they give like surface to air missiles, guns, and bazookas. And if you remember how we talked about how Reverend Moon backed Pol Pot and how that aid was like mostly propaganda, but a bit of money. So the same Cambodian soldiers allied with Pol Pot like come to the league, and the league just like gives them a bunch of guns and weapons. So they're funding Pol Pot. The league is also like constantly raising money for the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, where Sig-Lab also winds up doing like liaisoning for the CIA. And it really looks like this whole thing is sort of just accelerating into a new.
By the way, quick note, because this can't be referenced enough. Everybody likes to say, "Oh, when we armed the Mujahideen, we were just giving weapons to the Taliban." No, we were giving weapons to the people who molested children on such a grand scale that it allowed for the takeover of Afghanistan by the Taliban. Get it right, folks.
Yeah. That was the Pakistanis who were.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, it looks like, it looks like this whole thing is accelerating into like a new, even more bloody phase of the Cold War. And, you know, this is what the authors of Inside the League are writing this in 1986. And, you know, this is what they think is going to happen. You know, the league is going to play an even more central role in the Cold War. And then they won. The Soviet Union withdrew from Afghanistan and they collapsed. The Sandinistas fell. The Mozambique abandoned Marxist-Leninism. Vietnam, which was already on its way to becoming a capitalist market economy, withdrew from Cambodia, which is also now a capitalist market economy. The guys,
Vietnam's glorious people security forces regularly train with American police officers from a variety of states, including Oregon.
Yeah, and also I'm about 90% sure they get trained by the Israelis too, because it's great.
I mean, honestly, who doesn't? Am I right?
Yeah.
So it's all good. I do want to make one quick note, which is that Mozambique is my favorite country in terms of like the word for people who come from that country, because I find saying Mozambican to be incredibly satisfying. Spelling it's even better. Oh, I fucking love that word. I don't know why. It just feels good. Try it for yourself. Say and spell Mozambican.
I cannot spell Mozambique.
It feels good. Easier to spell Mozambican than it is Mozambique, because you don't have that weird fucking Q in there. Check it out, people. Spell Mozambican. Improve your day. That's not a joke. That's just a real thing.
Yeah, so the guys who assassinate Yugoslavian ambassadors live long enough to see Yugoslavia fall. The small guerrilla groups that were in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras are all exterminated. The government that comes after Pinochet privatizes even more state-owned companies than Pinochet did. Reverend Moon opens a car company in North Korea. China is now the world's second largest capitalist economy, and like even Cuba has special economic zones. So, yeah, adrift in this sort of new world of their own creation, the League changes its name to the World League for Freedom and Democracy. But the organization is a rump of its former self, but it still meets in Taiwan, even though Taiwan, like, overthrew the KMT. But, you know, it still meets there. But again, like, even Taiwan, where, like, the KMT's, like, military dictatorship fell. It's like, well, they're still a capitalist economy. And that's because we live in their world now. We live in the world where all of these people, all of these fucking Nazis got everything that they ever wanted, and it sucks ass. And it Yay. Is going to stay that way. It's going to stay that way unless.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, here's the thing, folks. You know how to stop this from happening?
Shoot all of the Nazis when you win the war?
Yeah, instead fucking of hiring kill them? All the Nazis. It's the same lesson with Confederates, right?
Yeah.
Like the lesson, the lesson from World War II and the lesson from the U.S. Civil War is the same, which is, when you beat a bunch of racists in a war, kill a lot more of them than you think you're going to need to. You're going to want to not kill as many of them because we're going to forgive and move on. No, kill a fuckload more of them. Like, everybody sit down right after you win the war. Sit down.
What is this fucking voice you keep doing? It's so bizarre.
What? It's my voice that I do when I'm being other people.
It's like zombie Mickey Mouse.
I'm Sophie. I don't like Robert's voices. Hoodly doodly doo. That's how you sound.
Robert's video with another towel.
I know. I did that with my mind again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's really key is after you say whatever you're saying in the fake voice for the person, then you got to say hoodly doodly doo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, this was a great episode, Chris. Thank you for writing it and for allowing me to have a vacation where I went and shot machine guns in the desert. That was necessary. And thank you all at home for listening to the podcasts that we make. And until next time, remember, I am the Jesus Christ of podcasting. How's that, Sophie? We good?
You're fired.
I've really been on one today.
Yeah,
I've really been wilding today. I don't know what's going on.
Vacation Robert is a mood. It's a vibe.
I've been having a vacation. I'm on a pretty heavy dose of Kratom, going to be honest with you here. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Anyways.
Vacation, all I ever wanted. Wow. Vacation, had to get away.
Does Vacation Robert have a book to plug by chance?
No. Yes.
Vacation Robert has a book to plug. What book is Vacation Robert plugging?
That's a great question, Sophie. Scholars debate what book I wrote, but a lot of them seem to believe that it's called After the Revolution, and that you can find it if you Google AK Press After the Revolution, or if you go to the thing that I'm looking up by trying to find where it is on our subreddit, because somebody said that I should plug these guys, and they were right. You can get it everywhere, like all of the places that books are sold. So if you're somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you can have the Jeff Bezos shit get them, or you can look it up on. Fuck. I'm having to scroll quite a bit. Disaster.
Oh, you can do
what
this.
What a massive failure for me.
Well, while you do that, I'm going to plug our good friend Prop's new cold brew at terraformcoldbrew.com.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, definitely check that shit out.
It's gorgeous.
And
listen to Hood Politics. And stream Prop's music. And follow Prop. This has just turned into like a huge Prop plug.
I think it's bookshop.org. Yeah, go to bookshop.org. You can find my book there. You can probably find Prop's book there. Let me look it up. Let me look up Prop's book on bookshop.org.
Prop's book is also called Terraform.
Let me look up Terraform on bookshop.org, which connects you to indie bookstores. Boy, there's actually, yes, Props book is on there, along with the book Terraforming Mars by some guy I've never heard of.
Shout out to that guy.
And the book Terraform in Action by Scott Winkler, which has what looks like an Ottoman Janissary on the front. Not really sure what's going on there. Anyway, bunch of weird books. Go check them out.
Behind the Bastards is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.